Welcome back to NALD's Young Professionals Network podcast, Growing in the Green Industry. Today's podcast is powered by our YPN network partner, Steel. Steel makes a full line of gasoline and battery-powered outdoor power equipment for the demanding landscape professional. Find yours at steelusa.com. Your hosts of today's episode include myself, Neil Glatt from Grow the Bench, Luke Melangrano from Mariani Landscape, and Brett Lemke with RM Landscape. How are you guys doing today?
Good.
Great. Super good.
Great day today.
How are you doing?
I'm just so excited to be back on a podcast finally, and some semblance of normal back in my life. This is definitely part of that, so it's good. And good. We have an exciting guest today. Luke, would you like to introduce our guest?
Yeah, absolutely. Today, joining us, we have Jan Johnson. Jan is a principal of the award-winning Johnson Landscapes and Pools in New York and an admired garden designer and author. She was the 2019 recipient of the prestigious Award of Distinction from the Association of Professional Landscape Designers. Jan and her husband ran a design build firm for over 30 years, and today it is a design and project management firm serving high-end residential clients. Jan taught at Columbia University for many years and still teaches at the New York Botanical Garden, where she was named Instructor of the Year. Trained in landscape architecture and professional horticulture, Jan has worked in Japan, Hawaii, and Kenya, among other places. She is an inspiring speaker and loves to show how you can co-create with nature in your backyard. Jan, welcome to the podcast. Anything I missed?
No, that's pretty good. Live up to that intro.
Oh yeah, all that travel. We're gonna have lots of fun conversation here. What is the designing in Kenya like compared to DC to Japan and to all those? Like, what are any of the plant material the same? Welcome, Jan. I'm glad to have you on here. I think this can be a creative conversation of sorts today. I think this would be fun.
And also, I'm thinking about sharing all the things I can with younger people about running a landscaping business.
Yeah.
So I got lots to share.
Well, I guess want to share a little bit of your story on how you built a business and what drove you to create the landscapes you do.
Sure. I'll try to make it short. So I did study landscape architecture way back in the 70s, early 70s, and I grew up in New York City in apartments. Landscapes were Central Park was essentially what I knew, frankly. But when I went to, and I thought I would be an architect because I was surrounded by buildings my whole life. And I went to Japan to work as an intern to be an architect. I was working in an architecture office there in Osaka. But on weekends, I would go to visit I lived in Kyoto, which is where all those legendary Japanese gardens are. So on the weekends, I would go to visit those Japanese gardens. And I just became enthralled with not only their beauty, but also the way it made me feel. I just felt the stress drop off of me. And I couldn't wait to get back to the gardens after working in a very busy office. And so when I did my projects there, instead of building a building, what I did was on one project for a museum, I actually put the building into the side of a hill and then started to design the hill. And at that point, my boss said, "You're not an architect in Japanese." He said, "You're a landscape architect." And he sent me off to a landscape architecture office. And that's how I discovered the profession. I had no idea there was such a thing. And from there, I went back to the States and studied at University of Hawaii. And because living outdoors was the thing back then. They were way advanced because, everything is outdoors in Hawaii. And then I went back home to New York where my family was and realized I couldn't be designing concrete plazas, and that's what they were doing back then. So I went and I worked for a French gardener at a hotel that won the best resort grounds in America the year before, the award for that. And I learned all professional horticulture from him. So that's how I blended the two, and that's how I got into the profession.
That's a story. there. Yeah. And I'm certain there's a whole lot of cool things in between all those. So that,
oh yeah,
I'm to your point, the fast short. One, but, the, but there are some good things missed out.
There.
So plenty of stories from that. Just even the travel part of that.
I lived in an organic farm in Hawaii, and that was the whole thing. You know, we grew everything and sold it all, and you know, those were the days.
it starts off with, at least to me, like the adventure that you have, especially when you're creating your career or starting a life, that to go out there and explore it, you clearly were not afraid of seeing different things or being away from family or different parts of the world, and and going where the opportunities led you. And so
I had to teach myself Japanese. I mean, that was a crazy thing. I mean, it was really, if I look back on it now, it's like, what was I thinking? But you know, you're only young once, guys, you know.
That's it. Get out there, have the adventure.
So Jan, you know, you kind of made that transition from doing the architecture bit into the landscape world. What eventually led you to want to start your own business?
That's great. I went on, I worked in landscape architecture offices. I got my master's degree in planning, you know, large scale developments. And then at one point I was like, you know, I'm missing getting my hands in the dirt, and I'm kind of that kind of earthy type person. Yeah, I could do pretty drawings, but you know, I didn't see the fruit of my efforts. And so I realized, and what happened was, while I was working in the office, I was doing residential projects on the side on the weekends, you know, and at one point I just said, well, this is crazy. I got to make a decision here. And that's when I started by myself, my company, in 1986. And then my husband joined 3 months later. And he and that's when we started Cruise and our shop and, you know, all the other related things. So it was design and build.
And what is your teaching focus on?
So I've always taught at the college level. And as a matter of fact, you're not going to believe this. Once I started working for that French gardener, you know, I graduated college, worked for the French gardener at this Mohonk Mountain House is the name of the resort in New York, Hudson Valley of New York. I then went to the local community college to see if I could teach a class or something, and ended up getting a full-time job and being an instructor for their landscape development and maintenance program. And so I did that for many years, teaching at the college level before going off to start my own firm and all. So I've always taught, I've always shared. And frankly, if you said to me, what of all these things that I do, I think being a teacher is probably the most rewarding for me.
And you're still teaching, right?
I still teach. I have to. That's why I wanted to talk with everybody at NALP, because, you know, just want to, hey, listen, here's some things you should know, that kind of idea. And I should tell you one more thing. I've written several books, and one of my books is a bestseller. It's called Gardentopia, Design Basics for Creating Beautiful Outdoor Spaces, Gardentopia.
I have to get a copy because my backyard is currently all dirt in my.
It's written very simply, because, you know, I figured I wrote it the way I read books, which is like I look at the photos, I read the captions, and then if that interests me, I might read the text, but probably not. So my book is lots of photos with informative captions, very informative captions, and short text. I think that's why it's so popular.
Sounds like a book right up my alley.
Nobody has the time to do that, right? So we can get through it.
Exactly. Yeah, that's it. Exactly. So Jan, you know, you got to start your business in the late 80s. How did that go for you when you first started? Overnight success?
Okay, this is it. I've made every single mistake you can make. So I am an expert on talking about this to your listeners, right? And I'm assuming a lot of them are starting out or have been in the business for a few years or whatever. Am I correct? What do you think?
Yeah, I think we have varying levels of experience, but yeah, we have people who are in programs who listen to this podcast as well.
Oh, that's great. Okay, yeah. Great. Wonderful. So what happened was I decided to start my own business. I thought, okay, I know a lot about the profession, about planting, about construction, about design. I can do beautiful designs. I know plant names. You know, I know drainage. I know, you know, right? I know elevations. So what else is there, right? Of course, I can start a company. Well, that was my first mistake. Because when I start out and I got some clients right off the bat, and my husband comes and says, so where's the invoice numbers? And I go, what's an invoice number? I was like, I had no clue how to run a business. And so what I'm trying to say there is that you have to have some understanding of business practices and business software and all that good stuff, which I did not have. And there's so nowadays it's a lot easier. Let me tell you, back then, before the advent of all this computer aided software, you know, for billing purposes and client management and all, it was quite a feat.
Yeah, but for some reason, I still want to avoid doing invoicing, right? As easy as it is these days, I just want to not have to do an invoice. But there's to that point, Dan, that's that creative piece. So when you want to design and build, or you want to be out there in the field, like nobody wants to sit in front of a desk and write an email or an invoice or proposal. And so you have to find what you're good at and not be surprised, you know, and then recruit and build the team around you, because it's just, we're not all wired to do it all.
Exactly. That, I guess that's the first thing. Know your limitations, right? The other thing is realize that this is a small business. And, you know, if you're interested in creating beautiful outdoor spaces, running your own small business may not be the answer. It might be work for botanical gardens or work for, you know, some institution, some college, or something, rather than run a small business, because that really does require so many more skill sets, right? And if you're not a people person, because I said high end, and that's another thing, high end residential, and that's a whole nother set of criteria that, you know, that you have to know. So for people starting out, I would say define your niche. And maybe you've talked about this already, about define your market niche. Don't take every job that walks through the door, which of course is what I did. I mean, this is why I'm so good at talking about this. I did everything wrong. Define your niche. Perhaps you are just going to do landscaping for country clubs and municipal spaces, so that you have that and you focus on that as your market, and you introduce yourself to every country club in the area, or whatever it is. I'm just pulling that out of the air. Or country clubs, golf courses, municipal spaces. Or your another niche might be working with developers who are building townhome communities and condo communities. If you're in that part of the world, that's happening. That's not happening where I live, but Or in my case, you choose to do residential. And so, okay, I'm doing residential. I'm not going to do other things. I'm doing residential. Is it the high end, which demands a lot of detailed, perfect work? Or is it going to in a few high end? Or are you going to do more middle class, which might be a little less demanding and a lot easier?
We had a good conversation last week with Pam Dooley, and she's in the Atlanta area, and she is, you know, she made that decision, and she was showing us how she's built off of that from a residential focus versus when you're in a hot market like Atlanta, where commercial is all around you too, the disciplines it needs to take. And she's built a really good company, not like you, Jen, too. It's that there, it shows at the other end of that, going through and maintaining those disciplines, there's a lot of reward at the end of it. Even if the early years you're risky, like, well, if I don't do this, I won't have the enough for payroll. Or if I don't do this, I'm not going to have that. But that just staying true to those, because even if you do the commercial job and you're not good at them, then you're going to still not have enough for payroll to cover right. From a profit.
Right. Piece. You say, oh, but I'll do that because that's a bigger payout at the end, but it really isn't, because you don't know that world. And so then it takes a lot more to get going. Yeah.
You'll be inefficient. You'll upset the customer. You'll spend more money to go and fix it. You'll, you know, you're not going to get the referral. You might even get a negative reputation, right? So there's all these issues, even though you get the check up front. And, you know, in my practice, I really focus on referring, right? So I took a call just last night from someone who saw some of my sales training stuff, and I love to train people to sell, but he really wanted help with the pricing side. And I was like, you know, I can help you price snow, but I really don't, I've never priced landscaping. And so I said, you know, I'd much rather refer you to somebody else, even though you seem to think I can do this job really well. And what I've found over the years is the people who I really successfully refer to other good people are actually my biggest fans. See? Like not the customers who I, you know, closely followed by the customers who love me, but the number one fan of me and my business is somebody who I've never actually helped outside of the referral.
Is that right?
Yeah. And then of course my referral partners love me too, right? So they're referring me people who will be in that 1B category of customers I add a ton of value to. But you know, these businesses all exist in every market, right? So if you're starting out, or even if you're not starting out, if you're just trying to focus better, the easiest way to do that, because saying no to somebody is impossible, right? Like those really persistent non-target customers will keep you on the phone and eventually convince you to take the job that you don't want or shouldn't be taking.
Yeah, I've been there too. Yep.
Yeah, right.
You know in your gut that you shouldn't do it, but you reluctantly say yes.
Exactly, right? But when you can say, yeah, I can help you by setting you up with this person who I really trust, who does what we don't do, I think that is just, it propels you to another level, actually.
Absolutely. And I have an interesting story to share about that, which I think your audience will enjoy. When I first started out, I went to a business coach, and he was about an hour away in New York City. Very, very expensive. I could not afford him at all. But I thought, I have to do this because I have to make sure my company, I was just starting out. And so I walked into this fancy office and he says, so what do you do? And I start out telling him, well, I design residential landscapes and we install them. And he goes, oh, that's interesting. What do you do? And I repeated myself and he goes, oh, that's nice. What do you do? And this went on for, I swear, half an hour. I did measure the site, I draw it up, I dump it up, dump it up. And my face was turning red. And after half hour, I was ready to walk out the door. I thought, I am paying him for this, what? So what finally came out was, he says, what is it that you do? What do you, and what came out of it was that I have, just like you folks have a connection to the earth, maybe a stronger connection to earth and plants and outdoor spaces than other people. That's just where we get our energy from. And I help enhance other people's connection to the earth and plants through design and installation. So people call you thinking they want you to put in a patio, when in fact, what they want, what you're doing for them is enhancing their connection to the outdoors through what you do. And it changed the way I saw my business. I realized it wasn't just tit for tat. It was a larger scope. And it helped me. So I think, you know, it's something people might need.
And well-timed for the spring, right? The last few conversations have just been the chaos of spring, the busyness of it, and what we have to do. And so, right, Luke, that was it. This past week was flower week, and you're there just cranking out annual color for everybody in there. But then, and all you're worrying about is, I got to get that pot in the ground to get to the next pot, to get to the next job. None of it is about
guys waiting for me right now. And I said, oh, I have to do a podcast. Sorry, guys.
You know? Yeah. So
stay there for a little bit.
Take a moment to breathe and understand what we're out there. And you know, and you'll look back at what you did this past week, Luke, or we all accomplished in these last couple of weeks before the holiday, and beautiful landscapes, very happy clients, or moderately happy clients, depending on where you are.
They develop a better connection to their outdoors after you're finished. I mean, some people might not you know, relate to it at all. And once you're done, all of a sudden they can't wait to go outside. You know, even though it might just be on their patio and looking at pots with beautiful flowers, hey, that's a connection.
Yeah, I agree. Last night I was walking around the dirt in my backyard trying to figure out what I wanted to do with the space, you know. And I'm not horticulturally intelligent, right? So I don't understand what I'm supposed to plant or when I'm supposed to plant. I don't feel any connection to any special plant. But when I'm sitting there, right, what I'm thinking about is I want a space where I can be outside because it feels good. I want to be able to have my friends over. I want to have some privacy from my neighbors. I want a place where all my friends' kids can run around that's not inside my house, right? Exactly. And the landscape designer who can figure out that that's what I'm looking for and deliver on it and talk that language rather than get into the science or the species or any of that is the one who's going to end up with the job, right?
Well, it's interesting you say that. So in my book, Gardentopia, it's 135 tips on what you can do. And one of them, I say, one of the biggest requests always for outdoor spaces is to have a nice private area, you know, that belongs to you, whether that entails screening and whatever else. And I said, people like to sit where their backs are protected with a view out. And the view could just be to your sliding glass door. I mean, it could be just, it doesn't have to be a view. It could just be a nice little scene. And I call that the lure of the sheltered corner. People love to be sheltered. And so the back could have either a wall or a hedge or a big tree or the side of a house, something to protect the back and then looking out onto whatever, you know, some flower pots or a nice vista. But lure the sheltered corner is a great understanding for starting out, you know, whether it's a hedge of arborvitaes or whatever it is, you know, behind you.
That's pretty crazy because I'm thinking about like at my house where I like to sit outside and at night or whatever, and like my three favorite spots are all exactly what you just described,
right?
Like, my back is protected, I view out, whether it's flower pots or, you know, the woods at my house or whatever, but those are all the areas that I enjoy sitting the most outside. Well,
I say to audiences when I talk, I say it's kind of like when we walk into a restaurant, you know, we immediately do a site survey of the restaurant. Where do I want to sit in 10 seconds or less, right? And we always, that's what we choose. We'd like to sit, you know, in a booth or in a corner or something like the proverbial, you know, table in the corner. Same idea.
Well, and the experience of designing these spaces and learning and, again, I think just the journey you had and opens up your eyes to so many different ways. And we all go to, you know, we go to learn. Many of us will go as landscape designers. We'll learn it through the classroom setting. That's helpful. But you have to be out in gardens. You have to be in these botanic gardens. You have to be on different homes, and you have to see diversity in the landscape to then create these ideas. Because Neil, you'll walk around your neighborhood and you built a new home, right? And so they're going to probably have a very consistent landscape. And so, but your travels across the country and the world have inspired you in a lot of different ways. And so even if you don't know what the heck that plant is in front of you, at least you know what you like and don't like. And so to offer diversity, and it's our responsibility as landscape professionals to bring that diversity to our clients, even if we are in a, you know, in neighborhoods or a typical, or even in the cities, right? It's all the same, right? A rooftop garden, a little planter here, you get the little front garden. So, but how do you make those creative and how do you really explore those spaces?
Yeah. And then also, how do you manage expectations, you know, with your clients, right? I mean, that was always something when I started out, how do you let them know what that you can do for whatever budget has been established, right? And I think that's people want everything, but they only have the budget for part of it, right?
You don't walk the New York Botanic Gardens or any other place and say, "Ooh, how," or like Longwood Gardens down in Pennsylvania, and you say, "Oh, how do I have that garden in my backyard?" Right, Neil.
Right, you manage
the budget you'll need for that will be pretty high, but pull it out. Understand how to scale those things to different levels. Exactly,
I think a lot has to do with client relationships and how you establish relationship. You know, right off the bat, you don't know them, they don't know you. How, you know, this is so important for running a landscape business, right? Right, Neil? I mean, you do sales, you said, so.
I have before, now I coach salespeople. And you know, really it's, can you connect with what is most important for that person, right? And I think you were so right when you say like, you have to have all these other skill sets, you know, and I talk to so many students who get into this industry because they really just love plants. They love that connection with that earth. And that's phenomenal, right? But most of your clients probably don't, or they'd be doing it themselves already.
Exactly. Right?
And they may have an appreciation for the experience, but they don't want to go as far as you've gone. And so you have to really understand how to deliver what they're looking for with just the right amount of education, but really focusing on their needs rather than focusing on what excites you, you know, and
that's
and,
right. That's that right.
That emotional excitement, you know, save it for the Elevate conference, right?
I totally agree with that.
Save it for the Facebook, the Young Professionals Facebook group, right? Share all that stuff there, but understand the extent to which your client is interested in that and bring it to that point and then stop.
Exactly. I totally agree with what you're saying. And always remember, it's the client first, client first. It's a small business. We're in a service industry. It's not about us, unfortunately. It's about the client and what they want and what they need and what the site can accommodate, right? They might want a beautiful flower garden that's, you know, suited for sunny conditions, but they live in the woods and they have a shade, you know, 2/3 of the time. So that too is like manage expectations, get them excited about a different idea. Forget the sunny garden idea, right?
So Jan, I want to kind of dive into this part a little bit more with this managing expectations. I think it's a topic that resonates with me a lot right now. And I think it probably might resonate with a lot of other people in this industry who are facing labor issues, supply chain issues, things like that. Brett, I mean, I'm sure you guys are in the same boat. You have clients kicking down your door that may have signed projects a while back and, you know, navigating those difficult waters. And, you know, I mean, Jan, you did high-end residential. That's the same
and they're the worst, right?
Yeah, that's the same market I'm in. And so, you know, a lot of times you're getting into these projects that might be 6 months, a year, 3 years, whatever, to do them. And everybody wants it now. What would your advice be to people on how to navigate those conversations with people?
Well, first of all, these days, I'm brutally honest. I said, if you want to do this, then just be prepared to wait. And one of my favorite lines right now is, and I throw it onto them, I say, are you patient? And then of course they'll say, oh yes, I'm patient. Well, of course, you know, they're not, but they just said that they are. So you already got them. Okay. They said they're patient. I said, okay, if you're patient, we can do this, but please know that it's probably another 6 months before we can get material or whatever it is. You know what I'm saying? And, Or there were several crop failures. And I explained to these people, I can't get that particular plant because there were crop failures this year. You just have to tell people it's a different world now. It is a different world, right? I mean, we're supply chain, long waits. So just be brutally honest at this time. And then they can't counteract that. They said, well, have you looked at every supplier? Yes, I talked to every supplier. It's all the same answer, right?
Sure, yeah. And I think it's along the line, it's, you know, setting realistic expectations for yourself too, you know, like not overloading yourself. And you're setting up
I overload
yourself for failure. I think if you're, you know, taking 3, 4, 5 appointments every single day to meet with new potential leads and things like that, you know, spread them out, give them a week or two and explain at that time, hey, you know, this is kind of our tentative timeline. I mean, we're booking work right now for little tiny projects, August, September.
That's right.
That's how far back we are. I mean, we still haven't even finished spring mulches yet because of those issues.
One person said, well, I'm going to find somebody else. I said, fine, go ahead. Ha, ha, ha. Yeah. I didn't say ha, ha, ha to them, but
go ahead. In our heads. We always, the strongest relationships will get us through these conversations. And there's more of an understanding. The patience is, they all say they have it, but no one has it, right?
And to the degree they want. Especially for us, we're seasonal business. Yeah, nobody has it, right?
Well, even if we did have the patience, we know we have in New York and in Chicago markets, like the winter's coming. So we have, even if they want to do, we're going to have to get it done before the weather changes that we can't do it. And so we did pick the business that allows time, you know, that has time on its side. But the relationships were strong, and you know, Luke, we're in the same boat. We don't have all that mulching done by any stretch, and so we're leaning on folks to understand why. And for the most part, they are. Some won't, and definitely after the 4th of July, people will be really like, "Where are you going to be with this mulch?" So we have lots of priorities that we have to put in place, but it is people have to be proactive, and if we haven't, you know. The client, if we haven't learned it ourselves, we're all clients of some other service. We haven't learned that you got to call ahead. You got to think about these things a little further. Maybe there's some benefits that will come out of this, but that's for only those that are understanding the new world these days and are adjusting. All the rest of us that are just, no, I could call tomorrow to get it done by next week. It's foolish to think that.
And another thing too, besides being brutally honest, managing expectations, is also keeping constant communication. Call up and say, listen, I haven't forgotten you. Just want to let you know that it's another probably 2 weeks. If people hear from you, they relax. You know, I'm guilty of that. Trust me, I am guilty of not maintaining constant communication. And that's a problem. See, I tell you, I made all the mistakes. I'm still trying to do that. And what does that mean? It means, you know, at nighttime when you come home from planting 800 plants, flowering plants that day, you still get on the cell phone and text message somebody or something saying, I haven't forgotten you, you know, just be patient.
Well, and right, that's really all it is it's a simple shoot them a quick email, shoot them a quick text, and I'll say 7 to 8 times out of 10, they'll back down and they won't bug you about it. They know that you're thinking about them. You're updating them. It's when they have to constantly reach out and ask questions. When am I on the list? Why am I not here? Blah, blah, blah. And they're getting upset and stuff. And I mean, the one thing I found this year that's been helpful is, you know, is sometimes you may have to break projects up even and, you know, bounce around. Yeah. It may not be the most efficient. You know, running around putting out fires, so to speak, isn't the most efficient way of running your business, and you're not getting anything really accomplished well. However, you're able to calm down some clients who might be a little a little upset with you at the time for that delay.
Yeah.
Well, I think the expectation, or setting the expectations, to really start with, how do you want to communicate? How frequently do you want to hear from us, right? And do you prefer a text or a phone or an email?
Well, that's a good point.
What hours, right? And I work teams through this all the time because they're upset when people don't respond to text messages or take 3 days to send an email back, and they're telling themselves stories that this person doesn't care or they're not working that hard. But everybody has their own expectation of what's the most, if something's really urgent, what's the best way to get a hold of you, right? For some people, it's a phone call. For some people, it's a text. For other people, it's an email unless the building's on fire, right? And so what are the rules that we're going to play by? And my realtor did a great job of doing this. We sat down with a whole questionnaire, and a big part of that was, how do you communicate? When do you want to work? And here's when I probably won't be available via these methods, but that doesn't mean that something's not happening, right? And it really gave peace of mind for me when different things were happening that, okay, I know Sunday afternoons definitely expect a response, and I know Saturday afternoons definitely don't expect a response.
Oh, that's interesting. That's very interesting. So it's managing expectations on the communication end as well.
It's getting ahead of that. It's helping to relieve that pressure of we need to communicate with everybody all the time.
Right. You know, when I do most of my communicating is when I'm driving from one job site to another. I'm on the phone. I call everybody. You know, I'm calling. How's it going? What's the next? Okay. I mean, it's because it used to be dead time before the era of cell phones, but now it's a very, very valuable part of my day is just driving.
You took the family trip over the holiday up to Adirondacks 4.5 hours. And I was on a call from the start to the end, random calls. And my wife looks at me and is like, is this every day for you? I go, yeah, you know, I'm taking advantage of the time, but it was just like, boom, call, next call, boom, call, next call. And it was, I didn't doze off on that trip at all. That was nice. Kids were on their iPads. They didn't care. So this was perfect timing, but yes, it was a little much that one.
Yeah.
But helpful.
And I was thinking of other things to offer to people in terms of the work. Is everybody experiencing worker shortage?
Absolutely.
Absolutely, right?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah. In my part of the world, it's all people from Latin American countries. Is it the same for you? I don't know.
A little bit of mix. I think in larger metropolitan areas, that is happening, or larger markets. You know, I've seen a world of that. How about you, Luke?
Yeah, I mean, our workforce is predominantly Hispanic, and so we're experiencing the same shortage. We've done some things over the past few weeks and gotten some people in the door. And
Luke, I've been admiring what Mariani's been doing on like the social media pages, and I see a lot of recruiting pieces and Spanish and English and just some really in some videos and pieces. So unique to what I've seen from your company in the past. And so you could definitely see there's an emphasis on how to build.
It's definitely a strong push for us right now. We've brought in some team members. We've hired a recruiter for the company now, that's their only job is to find us bodies for people in the field. On our marketing team, we've got two people on our marketing team, and they still obviously focus on, bringing us in work and clients and things like that. But, the overall kind of picture has been more to gear it towards the people who work for our company. And that's an important piece about it, and to try and get people who want to come and work for us and show that it's a good place to work. And
do you folks speak Spanish? You guys?
I speak. Yeah. I have like working knowledge enough to talk to my teams out in the field, but I'm not by any means fluent.
Do you, Brett? Do you speak it?
No, but it is. We know that has to be a part of our organization from the top down, and my children are starting to learn the language, and I'm like, this is the language to learn, or it's an important one, and we all did it, but it never sticks with us. But Luke, when you're out with your teams as often as you can, it's amazing what you pick up and how you move through it. And so if I probably didn't do phone calls on the ride, I would probably start learning how to speak Spanish better on those.
I pick up all the bad words really.
That's
easily.
That's it. Yeah. those are the ones that work well for you later.
Exactly. So. Yeah, exactly.
I speak a modicum of landscape Spanish, and my husband, luckily for me, is fluent, and that really does help. Now, I know you can use Google Translate. A lot of guys do Google Translate to get their points across, but it really, really does help. And at first I thought that they would learn English, but they haven't. Over the years, I've realized that's it. I have to just speak Spanish.
And so that's it goes really, really far when you can have at least a member of your senior management team who, yes, is fluent, but more importantly, can foster an appreciation for the culture and
exactly
work really hard to provide that messaging in an accessible way for people rather than expecting them to, you know, adopt to English or adopt to the culture. And I think that the companies who do that well find a much more motivated workforce from the Latinx population when they do. Yeah,
I agree, because I can establish relationship of some with my little bit of Spanish that I can do, and it really helps. And when I have people who work for me, like at the design end, and they go on the job sites and they can't communicate, and it doesn't work, you know. And I say to my assistants, I say, you have to learn some Spanish. You can't be in this profession if you don't know Spanish. I don't know what you guys think about that.
It's the evolution of it, and the workforce is changing. It's millennials. It's everything to be able to connect better and stronger. And then to the point, it makes your business run well. It makes the whole experience a happier and more successful one. And so it's evolutions, right? And the changing of the
and if they see that you're trying, you know, I might sound like a 6-year-old when I talk, but at least they know that I'm trying.
Well, let's talk about some really cool things. And that's in our rose and thorn category as we sort of wrap up the conversation here. And so it's just a little bit about what is, Jan, what's going well in your world, personally, professionally, anything you choose, or the thorn is what's going, something you want to be better. And so why don't you share your
so it's either thorn. Or, it's either something positive or something negative?
Well, you know, you don't always have to have a thorn. And in
quite honestly,
we don't always
have to
have
positivity. I like positivity.
Yeah. Everyone always has roses. Sometimes
I like roses.
Yeah.
Okay, what's good? What's good is that when COVID arrived, we thought we would be dead in the water, and the exact opposite happened. The exact opposite. We've been in this business for 35 years as a design build and a design project management company. And we thought the phone calls would ebb, you know, would die down. And we're busier than we've ever been. I always say, where were they 20 years ago when I really needed them? Now I'm kind of at the tail end, but yeah, we're busier than we've ever been, because people are seeing their houses or their properties as their sanctuaries, and they're willing to invest in them finally.
Wonderful.
So
good. All right. No thorn then. You're gonna stay.
I have to do a thorn too?
Yeah, if you got one.
Let me think of a thorn, guys. Okay, what's it? Oh, I know a thorn. Okay. Planning, town building inspectors, planning people, approval process, blah, blah, blah. It's gotten worse and worse and worse. It's gotten to the point of being crazy. It took us 2 years to get a building permit for 2 years for two different projects in different towns for building a swimming pool. Oof. Crazy.
Yeah.
We do everything right. But they've just become, where I live, very, very demanding.
How about you, Luke? What's your rose and thorn this week?
Let's see. So roses, it was nice to have a long weekend for Memorial Day, beautiful weather around here, and nice to get a little bit of a break from things. We've been kind of running 110 miles an hour, it seems like, since beginning of April. So that was nice. And big shout out to just the team that works for me. They have done an incredible job over the past couple weeks. You know, Brett, you kind of alluded to it earlier, you know, working in a lake community, it's big time flower push to get things all set and ready to go. So they did that. They did it very, very well. And so that was awesome to see. Great to be back on the podcast. I mean, it's been, gosh, I don't even know how long since I've been here, but
great to see you. Awesome.
It's nice to be back. So there's that. I guess my thorn will be the emails that I get. Since the beginning of the year, I've moved into a new position, and my emails have like quadrupled in that amount of time. I think I'm up to like 250 to 300 a day, which is not fun to try and manage. But I'm getting it. So. That's really about it. Nothing else too bad going on.
Neil?
I'm excited to be back for sure. It's been a crazy, 6 weeks. We had a lovely wedding. We got half of our honeymoon done. We had a few thorns with a couple little medical emergencies, but everybody's healthy-ish now, better at least. So shout out Ketchikan General Hospital for saving us. not as moved in or settled in the house as I want to be, obviously, with some of those things, but very excited that I am moved in and things are coming along. So life is super good. And being back on the podcast is a big part of that. So I'm excited.
And we're doing this. I mean, our listeners will never know, but we're doing this in the morning time. So we're all like, you know, this is versus an afternoon piece. And so I'm getting to see everybody drink their morning coffee. You guys look a lot different in the morning. You look more fresh and excited about the day than
this is like my favorite change that we've made on this podcast this morning, because I'm able to get some things done and then I've got the whole day ahead of me. So
I don't know. I liked usually would just go, we do the podcast and I float through the rest of Thursday and then Friday be like, all right, let's move on. But I'm excited for the change for this. We've got some really great guests ahead of us in the future here. So that's exciting. It's for us, we made a big milestone. So I'm happy about getting over that one holiday weekend. The next one's just a couple weeks away, it seems like. So how do we hit that one well? And help everybody see the path through a calm peace, which is challenging sometimes. So in next, there's my rose and thorns, as the plant would probably be anyway. So you got a little bit of both in it. So, I wake up, I love the business. I do it every day. There are many, many tough days, but they're way better than I think any other job would give me. So I'll take it.
So much more positive outlook now that we're past Memorial Day, right?
give it three weeks until we're knocking on the door of 4th of July. Yeah.
And guys, can I just add two things? Is that I have a Substack that I, do you know what a Substack is? That browser? Have you ever heard of it? Platform? Substack is a platform and people can write posts on their Substack. So I've started one called Gardentopia, and it's for landscape designers and landscape professionals. And so I would like to just tell everybody about it. If you just type my name, Jan Johnson, J-O-H-N-S-E-N, Jan Johnson, Substack.com, you'll find it. Mm-hmm. And I post twice a week, and it's only about landscaping, whether it's about plants or design tips or anything.
Well, another awesome resource. And my copy of the Gardentopia book is currently on order from Prime. So I'm expecting
this
weekend. And
thank you. Let me know, Neil. And
design with it. I will. Thank you.
Yeah, let me know.
Well, so good to be back, Jan. Thank you for being a guest. And thank you, of course, to all of our listeners for always listening. If you're not subscribed to the podcast, make sure you do it. And if you would take a moment to either leave us a review, share the podcast with a friend or coworker, or drop us a note about future topics and guests. We would love any of those things. And we'll see y'all back in a couple weeks.
Have a good one, everyone.
Take care, everybody.
Thank you.